and an open heart. And then, finally, I want us to focus on the way that Jesus' openness draws out this man's openness and our openness. So let's set the scene. And to do that, though, understand we're describing sometimes things that were exactly told and sometimes things the way they might have been. Okay? And if any of you have watched The Chosen, you have resigned yourself to the value of some of that sometimes. But we're going to describe the way some things might have been using anchors of things that we know that are given to us in the text. And hopefully to help us appreciate what's happening in that text. This man's son is, well, he's not sick. He's not hurt in the usual sense. His son is experiencing something unimaginable to me. This man's son is daily seized by an evil spirit that takes some kind of twisted pleasure in tormenting this boy, causing him to fall to the ground, to foam at the mouth, and to grind his teeth. And on top of all this, that evil spirit leaves him mute. He cannot speak. And this boy has been enduring this since early childhood. I remember one time, I haven't gone anything close to this, and some of you have gone through difficult things with your children. But I remember one time, Elena turned toward us as a toddler, and her face was completely distraught. She was completely silent. There wasn't a noise coming out of her. And 5 seconds go by, 10 seconds go by, she's not breathing. Those are long seconds. And, okay, 15 seconds, I guess I'm going to have to find out if I know how to do the Heimlich maneuver on a toddler. Don't know what I'm doing. She starts breathing. She wasn't choking. Later, looked it up, learned about a situation where sometimes toddlers, even 6-month-olds, will get worked up and have a reflex that actually, involuntarily, they won't be able to breathe. It's not just a stubbornness thing, but that those can be an involuntary thing. But they just stop breathing. And in other cases, that's the case until they faint, and it goes on and it's a regular thing. That was the worst case. She didn't faint. There were lesser situations later. It was an ongoing thing for us. But just in that moment, that feeling, this was not a passing thing, though, for this man and his son. Regularly, emergency situations met them. That's not just inconvenient. That's life-threatening. The boy needed to be kept from open fires, away from any kind of pool or well, to keep him alive. What would this father not have done? What would he not have done if there was anything to do to help him? Was he not praying for his son? Was he not trying to protect this boy? Was he not praying every frightful day for him? There were people, apparently, who could cast out demons. And some of the Pharisees had that reputation. None of them got around to doing this for his son. Years have gone by. And so he gets to Jesus. What happens when he comes to Jesus? Well, first, Jesus isn't there. One of his, they're called sent ones, or apostles, some of them are there, not one, 9 presumably are there. And the word is, they've been empowered to do the same kinds of works that Jesus does, so it will have to do. But out of 9 apostles, none of them could help. Doesn't say that they refused to help or that they didn't have the time to help. But what the man tells Jesus later implies that they tried to help. and you play that out in your head, what does that look like? I don't know, maybe they approach the boy and laid hands on him? I don't know. And then how do they know whether it worked or not? What's confirmation that the Spirit has left him? Well, maybe between their attempts and Jesus coming down, maybe the Spirit has convulsed him before Jesus comes down again. The Spirit has maybe made him to fall over again. I don't know what the indications are that the Spirit has left necessarily. But I know in some places, in Acts 19, evil spirits don't always take so well to failed attempts to cast them out. So maybe there was some manifestation of their failure. And after all that, the scribes start arguing with the apostles. And again, the indication is that they're arguing over this situation. You claim to be able to cast out demons, and you can't cast this one out, so what's the deal? It's time to go home for this man and his son. It's time to walk away, to accept defeat. We were told the Messiah had come. We were told that these men were empowered to vanquish the angels of Satan. And it's all a mess. Disappointment. But then there he is. I don't know that this man would have known what Jesus looked like, but others become very excited and are amazed at the one coming down the mountain. The one he really came to see, who had supposedly empowered these apostles to cast out demons. Can you understand why this man might not be so sure at this point? It is so common that a person becomes a little less sure about Jesus because of the failures of his disciples, right? People become a little less sure about Jesus because of the failures of his disciples. And if this man is anything like me, he downplays the possibility of a good result to prepare himself for another disappointment. And the dialogue that we have then between Jesus and this man, I just find to be one of the greatest examples of openness. It's different here. This word is overrun right now by people who make it a commodity, but it is authentic, truly authentic. It's open-hearted here. So let's read Mark 9, verses 14 through 29, before we look at just the openness of this man. Mark 9, verse 14. Jesus and a few of the apostles are the subject of the verb here. And when they came to the disciples, they saw a great crowd around them and scribes arguing with them. And immediately all the crowd, when they saw him, were greatly amazed and ran up to him and greeted him. And he asked them, "What are you arguing about with them?" And someone from the crowd answered him, "Teacher, I brought my son to you, for he has a spirit that makes him mute. And whenever it seizes him, it throws him down, and he foams and grinds his teeth and becomes rigid. So I asked your disciples to cast it out, and they were not able." And he answered them, "O faithless generation, how long am I to be with you? How long am I to bear with you? Bring him to me." And they brought the boy to him. And when the spirit saw him, immediately it convulsed the boy, and he fell on the ground and rolled about, foaming at the mouth. And Jesus asked his father, "How long has this been happening to him?" And he said, "From childhood. And it has often cast him into fire and into water to destroy him. But if you could do anything, have compassion on us and help us." And Jesus said to him, "If you can, all things are possible for the one who believes." Immediately the father of the child cried out and said, "I believe. Help my unbelief." And when Jesus saw that a crowd came running together, he rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, "You mute and deaf spirit, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." And after crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out. And the boy was like a corpse, so that most of them said, "He is dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose. And when he had entered the house, his disciples asked him privately, "Why could we not cast it out?" And he said to them, "This kind cannot be driven out by anything but prayer." First and foremost, the man asked for help. As far as the man is concerned, he asked for help. He did hedge his request, and we'll touch back at that on that later, but if you're able to do anything. But he made the request. Do you find that sometimes you don't know how to ask for something? See it in kids all the time, but maybe we find our own ways to do that as well. We want someone to help us, but we don't want to ask for help. We want to hint. We want maybe even to obligate. We want to lead them there without anyone being able to point out, even maybe ourselves even be able to point out that we really are leading them there. But Jesus is not in that sense obliged. The man didn't just kind of get around Jesus and nudge his son in that direction. Oh man, everything's really hard. He asked. He voiced the request. There's humility and openness and faith in doing so. Jesus didn't just do this because he felt bad, because he felt guilty if he didn't. Jesus saw the man's faith in asking, and he provided. It is our responsibility to ask. And then, not only does he ask for help, but of course, all along, he has cared deeply for his son. That ought to be a given. But this man is not focused on his own worries. I don't know what he's given up, what he's put aside to come to Jesus here. But he does put everything aside that his son might be healed. Some, you have to understand, in our day, but in their day as well, in a more overt way perhaps, some would have blamed the child or blamed something, someone, would have maybe resented the child. I don't want to think of what some wicked fathers would do with a son in this condition. In our day, it's veiled with concern for the child. What kind of quality of life would this have been? Put him out of his misery. This man upends his life in pursuit of the possibility that his son may be made well because he cared for his son. So he asks for help, he cares for his son, and he is proactive in that. He made his way to Jesus. I don't know if we have any indication of how much he's traveled, but he's made his way to Jesus. A big part of the point I'm going to be getting to is that he recognizes things are out of his hands, but I don't want to give the impression that we take that to the extreme of saying, well, it's out of my hands, so there's nothing we can do about it. Saying it's out of my hands shouldn't be an excuse to say that it's not my responsibility. The idea here is that we take initiative to seek the Lord's help. Okay, we take initiative to seek the Lord's help because it's out of our hands. But all of this is the request, and is being proactive. It all recognizes with humility that this is out of his hands. Not just the fact that he's not himself able to help his son, but even that his faith needs help. I don't know that he went to Jesus expecting to have his faith healed. But in this one act, Jesus heals the son and heals the father as well, or builds the faith, helps the faith of this man. Jesus pointed out this man's weakness. If you can do anything, you ever wanted to back up your word choice? If you could do anything, other people sometimes say, if you're willing. Jesus says, I'm willing. This man says, if you can. If you can. Jesus takes his word. He doesn't say, if I can. He quotes the guy directly. If you can. all things are possible for the one who believes. Jesus notices the man's waning faith. And again, we can understand why he may be questioning things at this point. How much disappointment he's faced already. For the man opens up. I believe. Help my unbelief. Even his own faith isn't where it ought to be. And he's recognizing that. And that he needs help, even with his faith. Have you ever finally gotten yourself to ask for help, but then still find ways to simultaneously hint at your own competence in that effort? I don't know. It's kind of a thing with, you go to the mechanic, right? And if you're a guy, you need to look like you have some sense of what's going on. You did need to come to the mechanic, but you know you're busy, and they probably can do it quicker. You maybe talk about it in a way that indicates that you're responsible in the way you care for your vehicle, and you know basically what the issue is. This is one of my favorite things about the contemporary show, the Dick Van Dyke Show. No. The character, Robert Petrie, he's always doing this. I think I can recommend that. Don't think you need VidAngel. Pretty good marriage counseling in that. Not good parenting examples, but moving on. But all the time, he there's a police officer, and he, you know, some profession that, you know, he needs to be a man's man and show how, you know, well, I know a thing or two about this, and puffs himself up, and always, without exception, bumbles the whole thing. He's always got to show that we really know what's going on. We really are competent. Refuse the tendency to downplay your weaknesses. Admit to God that it's out of your hands. All right, a little bit more contemporary. There's this whole adulting trend, right? I'm adulting, if you're just hearing about it now, which is because I'm really up with the times. But with every trend, there's things maybe where it gets something right, and maybe where it can go wrong. And I know it's all fun. But the good thing is that it's admitting that life is overwhelming and we don't always know how to do the things that adults are expected to do. But maybe where it goes bad is when we are just content with our incompetence, with no intention to grow and to learn for the sake of being a responsible person and being a responsible servant of Christ and serving others. So it's out of our hands, but again, we're seeking the Lord's help so he can save us, so he can help us, so he can equip us. So think of an area in your life where you are winging it. Sometimes it takes time to realize that's what we're doing. And every area of your life is a spiritual area of your life. So don't think, well, what's spiritual? Bible reading, prayer, maybe that's it. But maybe it's finances. Maybe it's intimacy. Maybe it's parenting. Maybe it's leadership in your workplace. Honesty in your workplace. Diligence in your workplace. Everything belongs to God, like Garrett talked about. So what is an area in your life where you are winging it? And what keeps you from asking for help? This man openly, I mean, he was encouraged by the Lord when he highlighted his need for faith, but this man sought help for his son and also found help for his faith. It isn't the focus of this lesson, but it is a focus, if not the focus, in the Gospels in terms of how this reflects on the disciples. And this contrast helps to appreciate the point. The disciples had done this before. They have cast out demons, Mark 3:15, Mark 6, verse 7, Mark 6, verse 13. Jesus gave them that power, and they have exercised that power. And their failure is what Jesus makes this exclamation about. This faithless generation. The disciples' failure to cast out the demon is a big part of the mess here. And when they ask Jesus, like they should, they ask. When they ask Jesus, why couldn't we do it? Jesus tells them, this kind can't come out by anything but prayer. I don't know if we should take from that, there are some kinds that don't need prayer and some kinds that do. But just pause and think about the idea that they, in their attempt to cast out a demon, did not pray. You might think of that just in terms of like, oh, the right ritual order, the right incantation. No, they didn't ask God to cast this demon out. Maybe. It's getting to their heads. Look at what we could do. And now they can't. They didn't ask. They didn't pray. This man, though, confesses his lack of faith, asks for help for his son and for his own faith. But I don't want to end this talking about the man or son or the disciples, but to consider how Jesus has been open all along here. And that openness draws out our own willingness to be vulnerable and honest with the Lord. Jesus has been open, and he has made his power known. This man knew of a Messiah who is casting out demons. And here we are on this Sunday, which every Sunday is a reminder of the resurrection, but this Sunday has already been mentioned some 1,990 years ago, depending on how you count the lunar calendars and all that stuff. But God has made his power known. Christ has made his power known in history. Women disciples became witnesses to the fact of the empty tomb, and Jesus began to appear alive again after having been crucified. He has made his power known, and people know all over the world, throughout the ages, people have learned, and if they need help, they can turn to the one who has the power. And we might timidly approach Christ and say, if you can save me from this sin, if you can save me from this worry, if you can save me from this fear, to which Jesus replies, if you can, all things are possible for the one who believes. Trust that he has the power to save you, to forgive you, to bring you peace, ultimately to raise you from the dead and let you be with him for eternity. So Jesus has made his power known, and Jesus has made his love and compassion known. Well, not a whole lot of good is done that someone could do something if they never would do something for you. Jesus was willing. He has the power to save us from sin and from death, and his sacrifice shows how far he goes to save us. Do you believe that? Do you believe that in his heart he has compassion toward you? And Jesus has been clear about other things in this passage: his power, his love, but also sin and faithlessness. Jesus was open and honest about the failures around him. Of course, that kind of openness drove people away. Openness about sin and about repentance. So Jesus openly bemoaned this sorry generation and the mess that had come about when the disciples left this poor man all the poorer for their disappointing display. Jesus is honest. Jesus is pointing out the weakness of this man's faith. But we can trust him with that, receive that criticism, and we could admit it and receive the necessary help. And then in healing the son, Jesus makes his restoration clear and sure. He said, come out of him. And he doesn't always follow it up like this. Come out of him and never enter him again. And I just, if the father had any wherewithal to listen to the words that Jesus was saying right there, come out of him and never enter him again. Your son is free for good. At first, the evil spirit convulses the boy. The boy is then completely still and presumed by others around them to be dead. Jesus' work is not always immediately obvious to everyone. But then Jesus takes him by the hand and lifts him up, and he arose. It's a funny thing about those words, because they're used just for people getting up. But they're used as well for people getting up from the grave. It seems like every time you see it in the gospel, maybe it's just a little reminder that there's more going on, and this points to something greater than just getting up. If you are all bound up and knotted up, closed off to God's appeal, you need to see that he has not been so to you. Some must have been reading in Romans. In Romans 10, Paul quotes Isaiah, who talks about how God has had his arms stretched out all day long for a rebellious, disobedient people. He is open. He's made that known to us. And so may we stretch out our hands to him and say, I believe. Help my unbelief. And if we do, he will one day take us by the hand and raise us up. Let's stand and sing the invitation song.